All right. Welcome to Growth Over Comfort. This is Simone.
This is Dawit.
And today we're going to be talking about this book that we've been reading called Personality Plus by Florence Littar?
Yeah, Littar.
It's How to Understand Others by Understanding Yourself. We're gonna go through the four different temperaments, and then we'll see where we go from there. Dawit, you want to share the temperaments?
Definitely.
So in this book, it talks about four different personalities that everyone goes into, categories. The first one is called choleric. Choleric are the straight to the point, blunt, very result-oriented, very impatient people. That's some of their strengths. They're the leaders. They take charge. But their weaknesses, they're very aggressive. They come off very arrogant, cocky. That's the choleric. The second one is the sanguine. Sanguine is this outgoing personality, very fun, life of a party, adventurous, colorful. They always have ideas, but their weakness is discipline. The third one is the melancholy. The melancholy is your thinker, your artist, appreciates details, very logical, perfectionist, very sensitive. You know, these are people, when they watch a movie and there's a sad scene, they actually cry. They feel the emotion of the movie. But their weakness is, because they're so perfectionist, they can't be charmed. You know, that's a weakness there. And the fourth one is the phlegmatics. These are the easy people, easygoing people, very patient, cool, laid back, very calm under pressure. That's another strength they have. But their weakness is they just lack motivation because they're very purposeful driven. So unless they have a purpose in doing something, they won't even start. But they'll just have fun and very people, you know, kind of like people pleasers, I would say. So these are the four personalities. I'm sure as I was describing these personalities, I'm sure you were probably thinking, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, that's me. Oh, that's right. And this book goes into extreme detail and goes about the strengths and also talks about addressing a weakness. And I think unless we address the weakness and we find out where is our downfall, we won't be polished. And if we're not polished, I don't think we're even bringing out the best in ourselves. Yeah, that's the way I would look at the book. And most importantly, after reading this book, I was able to understand the way people are made and think. And for me, especially, I was able to relate to them. So, for example, if I met someone who's straight to the point, I don't even go through the storyline. I just go straight to the point and results. And I hit them with bullet points. Someone who likes stories, I just talk about the fun, what I felt, what I learned during the journey, with emotion and dramaticness. That doesn't say because I'm not dramatic, I can't add dramatic, but I can emphasize on that, and that will relate to them more. Because it's not what I say, it's what they hear, you know? And the melancholies, I always talk about statistics, percentages, numbers, facts, you know? These are like very serious people. So with them, I can't, you know, go over, I can't be too dramatic. They'll catch it, and because it's too dramatic for them, they're going to tune me off. So I had to realize how to channel that. And the phlegmatics, I'm pretty easy going with them, and I go about what happened at the end kind of thing, and the shortcut. And wow, you know, it's so chill, right? I did this, and people gravitate to that because they like shortcuts. So because they receive information in this manner, it helped me understand people, and actually it helped me in my relationships with my family, with my friends, with my brothers, and creating relationships is what I'm talking about. I don't know. What do you think, Simone? You just read this book. Can you talk about what you're going through right now?
I think one of the most important takeaways from this book is that we are born with these temperaments. And I don't believe that they change. As far as Florence, as she puts it, she compares it, our temperaments, to stone, the stone of the statue. So whether I'm created with marble and Dawit is created with graphite or whatever it is, that's not going to change. The only thing that'll change is the amount that we're polished. And the only thing that's in our power is the polishing. So I think we need to come to an acceptance and understand our imperfections and our strengths and take the time to polish ourselves, polish our character, smooth out the rough edges. And in doing so, we learn to accept ourselves and accept others as well. And I think that's the biggest takeaway of this book, because you should never go into a relationship with anybody, whether it's intimate or platonic, trying to change who they are to adhere to what you would like or fulfill an illusion that you have of them. So I think that's the most important part.
Yeah.
And also, I like this book because this is one book I've applied the most in my life. If I have to trace back and see what's this one book I can always go back to and pretty much I always use everything in this book, is I think for me it was Personality Plus, because I always deal with people growing up. So now, because of this advantage, I'm able to connect with people and actually pretty much see where they're coming from and having meaningful conversations. You know, like, for example, if I meet someone straight to the point, I'm not going to go into the details and, you know, I'm just going to go straight to the point and I'll bring the best out of them. They'll be comfortable with me and they'll open up. I think this was able to break a lot of shells from my end, I would say. And at the same time, I was able to understand where people are coming from and I stopped judging people, you know, from mine, because I had a prejudge. So, oh, this guy's weird, man. How come he does this? Well, to me, he might be weird, but to him, I'm weird, right? So who's really weird? I think the one who's weird is not the one who doesn't know what he doesn't know. I think the one who's weird is the one who doesn't understand where the other person is coming from. You see what I'm saying? So I think that's where knowledge comes. That's where information comes. That's the way I would look at it, you know?
And I guess in terms of compatibility, I think I want to go in that direction. The book talks about how opposites are compatible. Mm-hmm. So the chill, laid back, phlegmatic, she advises them to pair up with a choleric, which is more of somebody who can take that leadership position and kind of distinguishes what's right and wrong. Because it says that 95%, right? 95% of the time that a choleric is usually right.
Exactly.
And it kind of balances each other out. And then same thing on the other end, which is the sanguine. The sanguine needs a melancholy in their life to kind of put order and put lists to the very enthusiastic, vibrant sanguine. So I don't know. So do you think that we can cross the line in terms of phlegmatic being compatible with a melancholy and sanguine being compatible with a choleric?
Yeah, I think so. As long as both parties are polished. I think if both people understand themselves and they gain understanding of their other personalities, they'll be able to mesh. And they'll be able to, I would say, listen to each other more openly, but at the same time, not compromise who they are. Because at the end of the day, that's who they are. No one can change you. They can be influenced. But at the same time, when it goes down to like situations, the real personality will come out, I think. Mm. So if you're able to love somebody for who they are, I think you should understand their personality. And it would make sense in my mind to find someone who is stronger in some areas that I'm not in. Mm. So, for example, if I'm very optimistic, and I'm with someone who's overly optimistic as well, I think we'll have fun, but we'll be in La La Land. You know what I mean? Like,
you need somebody to bring you down to earth every once in a while.
Exactly. And because we're in La La Land, we're so in La La Land, every time we come down, it's going to hurt. Mm. You see what I'm saying? So now we're going to question ourselves. Again, I'm not saying that there's no good marriages who are sanguine, but I would say like a sanguine with a melancholic makes a lot of sense. Because here's someone who's very optimistic, or she's very optimistic, but the opposite party is detail-oriented. So the other person is going to give them a game plan, a roadmap to channel this optimism. Mm. You know what I mean? And they'll be able to work together. I think that's a good marriage, I would say.
That's true.
And versus a choleric who's like very aggressive, when he has a calming support, she's going to relax him, so he won't, or he's going to relax her. So now, even though he's going to deliver his blunt points, it's going to be with poise and there's going to be better delivery, I think.
I think it's very comparable to love languages.
Cause like 100%.
Just like you have to understand the other person's love language, you have to also understand their temperament as well. Mm-hmm. And you should never try and... You're not going to sit there and change anybody's love language, like harsh reality. Like,
exactly.
If somebody... Love language is words of affirmation. You can do all the acts of service that you would like, but it's not going to show the same amount of love that words would. And same way with the temperaments. Like if somebody's a sanguine, there's nothing that you can do to kind of change who they are. That's how they are. They're going to always be enthusiastic. They're always going to be the life of the party. They're always going to be somebody with attention on them. So if that's something that you don't like, then do not jump into it in the first place. Mm. That's why I think you should distinguish this and understand each other and be friends with somebody before you get into a relationship.
Exactly.
And I think the biggest reason for divorce and breakups in this country is we don't take the time to not only understand the other person, we don't take this time to understand ourselves. We don't even know our own love language, but yet we're trying to impose that on somebody else. So we're setting up blind expectations, unannounced expectations, and then getting disappointed when those expectations are not met. So not only is that unfair for the other person, but it's unfair to you as well, because you're inhibiting the abundant love and joy that you can get from a relationship just because you don't take the time to understand yourself and the partner as well.
Exactly. Beautifully said. And just to piggyback on that thought process, a lot of marriages divorce. Of course, if God is not in there, in my opinion, I don't think it's going to blossom.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there has to be communication. And I think communication is, it's not what you say, it's what they hear. So if you're, let's say you're a Spanish speaker and the other person speaks French and doesn't speak Spanish, it doesn't matter how much positive you say in Spanish, because they don't speak Spanish, they're not going to feel what you're saying and they're not going to understand where you're coming from. But when the Spanish speaker takes time to learn French and speaks in French, that is love. And I think that's where a lot of relationships drop the ball. So I would take that concept and take it to love language and personality. Just because somebody's straight to the point doesn't mean they're rude. Look at their perspective. They're speaking from their heart. I think everyone else is rude, because everyone else is sugarcoating or telling a story around the bush or being way too detailed instead of just telling it as it is, you see? But for someone who is very calm and does... Because we judge people by what we would do. So let's say a phlegmatic who is very calm, very cool, and non-confrontational, when he meets a choleric, imagine, he's going to judge him by... He's like, man, I don't sell that to people. Wow, this guy is rude. But that's so ignorant, I would say. They should judge by what they... What if he was a cleric? Because you're made the way you are. Plus, thank God for different personalities.
Yeah.
What if everyone was phlegmatic? Imagine.
Nothing would get done in this world.
Nothing would be done. And what if everyone is cleric? Everyone would be a leader, but like no followers.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own vision. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Imagine everyone is sanguine. So much fun, but no like productivity. Or what if everyone is melancholic? So much detail and everything, but like no fun. We're so serious. So I think we should identify people's differences, and the most important is celebrate our differences. And I think our marriage is the greatest celebration of our differences, and a good friendship, like a good solid confidant. If you look at some of your good friends, they might not have your personality, but they probably are compatible to you because they have different personality. So you can feed off each other, I think.
I think... I forgot what I was going to say. I think it's important that we understand that the way that somebody is made, like it might sound so obvious, but the way that someone's made is the way that they're made. Like, I know it sounds so simple, but it's so hard for us in today's world to accept that. And there's so many movements in terms of like colorblind and all this other stuff, but I don't agree with that. Like, we should not ignore somebody's differences. We should accept them, see what it is, see them for who they are, put ourselves in their shoes and understand where they're coming from, and live together in adversity. Like, that's the whole point of life.
Exactly.
And I think we need to take the time to understand who we really are, because there's no way that you'd be able to understand someone if you don't even understand yourself. Because if you don't understand yourself, you're going to start to see your own weaknesses in others. And that's something that's very dangerous, and I've done before, and I'm pretty sure you have as well.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think we really do need to take the time to understand who we really are and spend time with ourselves. There's a lot of people who feel uncomfortable being by themselves. They always have to be by people. And I think that that's an example of lacking the time in, like, not necessarily isolation, but in terms of like spending time with yourself, being able to go to a park by yourself, or go to a beach by yourself, or do things by yourself, have dinner by yourself. Like, there's a lot of people who cannot do that, and I think that's really important, I guess, before you get into a relationship with someone.
Exactly. And also, when you're by yourself, is, I think the most important part is the self-reflection part of it, you know, identifying where you're going, where you're coming from, how far you've gone, even though you haven't reached a destination, but how far you've made it and who you've become in the process, you know. You should value that, and I think you should trace back to some of the good you've done and also some of the things you can improve on, and take it as a learning lesson, so the next part of the chapter or the next journey, you're looking at it from a, I think, a broader perspective instead of a narrow perspective. So unless you have these self-reflections with yourself, I don't think you'll grow as a person. Like, what's the point of a life unexamined? It's not worth living, I think, you know?
Yeah, I think we should kind of examine ourselves, right?
100%.
So 100%. Me personally, I'd categorize myself as a phlegmatic. I'm somebody who is very, just not, I wouldn't say carefree, but I am able to get along with most people, happy most of the time. I'm very creative. I don't really like to have order. I guess that's a weakness of mine. I don't like to be put into confined thinking, forced into confined thinking, and somebody telling me how to think and like what to do and stuff like that. That's something that a phlegmatic doesn't like. But I also have a melancholic side, but I think that's conditioned, like we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
My melancholic side, I think, is conditioned from my mom. She's definitely a sanguine, but a melancholy as well at the same time. So she likes order. She likes to be very neat and presentable and stuff like that. So, yeah. And whenever I seek friends, I usually... I'm very compatible with other phlegmatics, but I'm very attached and drawn to sanguines. And I guess that explains our friendship.
Exactly. That's the secret, right? For me, I would say I'm a sanguine. I like optimism. I like new ideas. I enjoy meeting people, connecting to people, loving people. You know, I wouldn't say I like attention, but I like everyone having fun and everyone being united and everyone being included. I like, that's just, I think that's when I find myself the most happy. But at the same time, I've definitely been conditioned by my mom, who's a phlegmatic, who's also a people pleaser, but at the same time, very conservative. You know, she's not like, she doesn't introduce herself to other people, but at the same time, if someone takes time to meet her, they would love her. She has a lot of good traits and everything. So I think I'm a sanguine, but very, very conditioned by phlegmatic. At the same time, for me, because I'm so optimistic, I like new ideas, I like projects, I like finding solutions to problems, I'm very, very drawn to melancholics. Because for me, when I see a melancholic taking time to put everything in a game plan, package it, put a checklist, have goals, I am so drawn to that, you know? And that explains our friendship as well, too, because we're able to work as well, too. And any melancholic as well, too. So I think, that would explain my personality. Definitely a sanguine, but conditioned as a phlegmatic, too. I could be easygoing and pretty calm and nonchalant as well, too. But I'd rather be dramatic, though.
So do you see yourself being in a relationship with another sanguine?
No way. I just know. Because we'll just have so much fun and like so much ideas, nothing will be done. So like, not to be pessimistic, I think. I guess that's my phlegmatic side. But I just know that I know. Of course, we'll have fun. But I don't think we'll... How do you put it? Like, I'm not going to be in one place. You know, we're all going to be in different places. Even as a sanguine, I think she's going to be traveling some countries. I'm going to be traveling some countries, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is that going to help our relationship? I just don't know. That's a huge question mark. So for me, I'm drawn to melancholics, so calm, quiet, who like to listen. And oh, that's another thing. Another sanguine. We're always going to be loud. We're always going to be talking. We're going to be sharing stories, you know? That's nice, but who's going to be listening? Imagine, it's going to be a loud household, a lot of celebration, for me, my dream wedding is to have like 4,000 people.
Yeah.
I just love, and I want to bring everyone I've met in my life, you know what I mean? And she's going to bring everyone in her life, imagine. So dang, it's going to be too loud, and I don't know, it just, it's going to be a firecracker for sure. We're going to have a lot of fun. I won't lie, but I don't think it's going to be productive fun, you know? It's going to be, So definitely melancholic.
What about you? Do you see yourself?
Do you see yourself as a phlegmatic with a melancholic? Do you see yourself with another phlegmatic?
Personally, I don't see myself with another phlegmatic because, as a phlegmatic, we lack motivation until somebody motivates us.
Mm.
We rely a lot on the extrinsic motivation,
mm-hmm.
and we lack intrinsic motivation. So being with another phlegmatic would mean you're going to have those conversations where like somebody asks, what do you want to eat? I don't know. What do you want to eat? What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Like, that's what happens when two phlegmatics get together, because we're honestly just down for anything. But yeah, I think I'd need a sanguine or somebody, or even I guess the book advises a choleric, but I don't see myself with a choleric. I can't stand somebody who's confined thinking like that. But I guess here's some of the strengths of the various characteristics. So if you guys want to see how this relates to you. So the popular sanguine, one of the strengths would be animated, playful, sociable, convincing, refreshing, spirited, promoter, spontaneous, optimistic, funny, delightful, cheerful, inspiring, demonstrative, mixes easily, talker, lively, cute, popular, and bouncy. And then the peaceful phlegmatic would be adaptable, peaceful, submissive, controlled, reserved, satisfied, patient, shy, obliging, friendly, diplomatic, consistent, inoffensive, dry humor, mediator, tolerant, listener, contented, pleasant, and balanced. If you want to read the choleric and the melancholy.
Exactly. All right. Yeah, so the choleric is adventurous, persuasive, strong-willed, competitive, resourceful, self-reliant, positive, sure, outspoken, forceful, daring, confident, independent, decisive, mover, tenacious, leader, chief, productive, and bold. And then the perfect melancholy is very analytical, persistent, self-sacrificing, considerate, respectful, sensitive, planner, scheduled, orderly, faithful, detailed, cultured, idealistic, deep, musical, thoughtful, loyal, chart maker, perfectionist, behaved. Wow. That's
so
hot.
So which two is it that are relationship oriented? That's the sanguine and the phlegmatic, right?
Definitely. The sanguine and the phlegmatic are definitely people.
Mm. Yeah. And then the choleric and the melancholy are more task oriented.
Yeah, and more independent too with their task.
Exactly. Let's just get stuff done. Like, let's cut the BS. Like, let's just get to where we have to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for them, it's all about winning and losing.
It's black and white. They're very black and white people.
Exactly. For us, it's having fun. And yeah, we learned in the process. We might have lost, but we had a lot of fun, though.
Mm.
At least for a sanguine.
For sanguines and phlegmatics, they go into a situation saying, let's have fun and learn through the process.
Exactly.
And then the other side is saying, let's go and learn, and then we might have fun in the process.
That's a beautiful way of describing it. That makes a lot of sense.
So we're constantly seeking fun.
Yeah.
And then we're able to retain the knowledge from it.
Exactly.
But then they're constantly willing to learn, and then if fun comes, it comes. Like, it's not necessary for them.
Exactly.
But for us, fun is necessary for us to learn, and then fun is not necessary for them.
Exactly. And plus, as a sanguine and phlegmatic, we go in there very hang loose.
Mm.
We're not there so sensitive or so intense.
Exactly.
At the same time, with the choleric and melancholy, they go in there very intense, and like, they're just there to win.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they don't want to play in the game, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's a different mindset. So,
What are some ways that you can polish yourself?
100%. So, with the sanguine, like, for me, what I do is, because one weakness is time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can be all over the place. I literally have 20 alarms in my phone. Like, I know myself. Like, in the morning, I'm not a morning person. So, I literally have, like, 10 alarms.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I have to be at work by 9 a.m., I'll wake up, my first alarm is at 7:55, 8:05, 8:07, 8:12, 8:15, 8:25, 8:40, 8:46, 8:57, barely walking at 8:58, barely. And then I have a game plan for 9 to 9:05, I have a storyline to go in there, because when I'm late, it's going to be a dramatic scene.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So that's one thing with time. And plus, because I'm out of time, my car time is a little bit ahead by 5 minutes. Just to catch myself. So it's just something that's helped me all along.
Mm.
And plus, for me, I force myself to have goals with deadlines.
Because
all this time for me was goals and having fun, but now it's like deadlines. And the way I trick my personality is, hey, once I hit this goal, I'll have fun, and then the next one's gonna be even more funner. So let's get this out of the way.
That's true.
Yeah, so I kind of go on that mentality as well too. What about you as a phlegmatic and melancholy? Interesting.
To kind of bounce off of yours, same thing with me. Like phlegmatics, we have a lot of goals floating in our head, but we never attach a date where we want to accomplish those.
Mm-hmm.
So goals without a date is just a dream, right?
Exactly.
And it's just being hopeful that something would happen. But I guess for me, since I lack intrinsic motivation, something that I've been practicing is to callous the mind. So every single day I try and do one thing that I hate to do. Like I hate doing it. It can be something from running 3 to 4 miles in the morning. I am not a morning person, if you know me. So like forcing myself to get up and get out there and run, which is something I hate doing as well. And by doing that, I'm literally callousing the mind and controlling my mind rather than having my mind control me. And as a phlegmatic, I think that's something that's very essential and I would recommend people do, because as a phlegmatic, you're very chill and you'll make up excuses for why you're so chill. And you'll come up with a lot of excuses for why that goal wasn't accomplished. Oh, remember this, and this, because your car broke down the other day. Like, that's why it stopped you from doing this. So it's cool. Don't worry about it. Like, that's the mentality that a phlegmatic has. And it's good to be optimistic like that, but at the same time, that's why you need to have balance and order to your life too. So like, that's why we have to rely on melancholies and cholerics to kind of bring that to light for us.
100%.
And one thing we forgot to mention is all four temperaments are necessary, and neither of the temperaments are good or bad. Like, it's just what it is. That's how we are. And all four of them are necessary for the functioning of this world, I believe, in my opinion.
100%.
Because, like he said, if we had a world full of sanguines, we would all be having fun without order. That'd be dysfunctional.
Right.
And then if we had cholerics, nobody would be laughing. Nobody would be having a good time. There'd be all leaders and no followers. If we had a bunch of phlegmatics, we would probably all just be chilling, smoking, and living a hippie lifestyle.
Exactly.
And then if it's a bunch of melancholies, we'd just be emotionless, data-driven people with no love, affection, or anything like that. So I think it's necessary for the fluidity of our functionality, I guess, in this world.
100%. Also, once you know your personality and once... This is so cool for me. I'll give you another testimony. Because I read this book, I was able to spot their personalities at the initial contact. Do you know how powerful that is? So, for example, I'm a sanguine, right? I always come late. But one of my managers was, I had two managers. One was a choleric, result-oriented. So I made a deal with them. I said, hey, as long as I'm the top performer in your office, can I be late a couple of times? I had that conversation. And that forced me to keep my good word. And plus, when I was late, he was like, it's not good because time is serious to clerics, but results are more. So I delivered results. Another one, I had another manager who was phlegmatic, very easygoing. I'd come in late, and I'd be easygoing about it too. I would make it a big deal. I could tell he's making a big deal because he didn't want the office to be late as well.
But he personally doesn't care.
He doesn't care. And would have conversations. I'd make him laugh. I'd make him forget about why he pulled me over. I swear. I'm just being honest. but I reassure him that it will never happen again. Thank you for this conversation. So pretty much, I'm so bad. I was late like 20 times. And we made a deal, like, for every... Because this is a sales job.
Yeah.
For every sale I make, you got to take away a lateness. And he would laugh. I'd buy him food. And if I was late those days, I would talk to him. Because he likes to talk about himself. So I would listen. I would ask him questions about it purposely so I can be on his good side. And he loved me. Till today, he calls me every time. Because even though he got fired and I moved on from that job. So I think it's good. And at the same time, you can take advantage sometimes.
Yeah.
I hate to say that. I just say... At the same time, like when I meet someone who's sanguine, we can just play along the whole day. We won't get tired of each other.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to channel my energy, because if I meet a melancholic, I put all my jokes in my pocket. And with them, it's all facts. I don't talk about what I think or what could happen or scenarios with them. With them, it's serious. They're very realist, logical people.
Emotion goes in one pocket and... stats and charts and facts come up,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very interesting dynamic once you have this book, you'll be able to pretty much channel your energy, because the whole day, if I was just, you know, cracking jokes, I'd be exhausted. Mm. So I was able to channel my energy. You know what I mean? So now I feel so refreshed, because when I contact somebody, he's phlegmatic. Oh, cool. I'm going to be chill with them.
Yeah.
Someone's cleric. Oh, I'll just talk about results.
Yeah.
Hey, this is what I do. This is what I've done, blah, blah, blah. Not bragging,
yeah,
but just to connect. And it's amazing the way people receive you.
Yeah.
And when they leave you, they'll leave you with a smile, and they'll love you, and you'll create this like magnetic personality. And I think that is so damn powerful.
Definitely, yeah.
I think the main takeaway from this book, I think it's so important because this can help you in so many avenues of your life. I know we've been talking about relationships a lot, but even for interviews, as soon as you go in to speak to the interviewer, you can see what kind of temperament they are, and you can appeal to that temperament.
Mm-hmm.
But they have no idea what you're doing.
Isn't that crazy, bro?
Just based off nonverbal cues, the way that they dress. If they're conservative in the way that they dress, then they're most likely a choleric. And if they're somebody who's not smiling too much, they give you a firm handshake and they're just kind of like, let's get to business, then you get straight to business with them. You cut all the storytelling out of the way. You just give them an answer. For a question, you give them an answer. For the sanguines, the ones that are very bubbly, they're wearing bright colors, they're smiling the whole interview process, even their handshake is met up with like an embrace and everything, like they're very touchy. With those people, you can add a lot of emotion, a lot of storytelling. You can even fabricate stories to appeal to them. And they don't even know. The funny thing is, they don't even know that you know who they are. So, I mean, it's almost like a superpower, I guess.
Dude, some memories come to mind. I'll never forget my first job interview.
Yeah.
The whole day I was playing basketball. So I was sweaty. And my dad just picked me up and said, hey, there's a job interview. Random. So I went to this guy. This guy is so phlegmatic. And that point, I've read that book. And he gave me the application. And I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I know a couple people in your office. And right away, he liked me. Right away. Because he's so phlegmatic. He just cares about things being purposeful. That's what they value, purpose. So with them, and I said it so nonchalant. Even though I was sweating, and mentally, I was not prepared to be in an interview. It was just like last minute, you know?
Yeah.
But I kind of like last minute. That's why I think where I like to thrive. So with him, I was able to do that. Now, with a choleric and sanguine, with a choleric, I was so confident in my interview. I even asked how big his team is that he's leading and what drove him to this team and what's his results in the last 5 years, because they're very result-oriented.
Mm.
And to that interview, I showed up 10 minutes earlier.
Mm.
You see, with a handshake, I was at the edge of my seat, hella confident.
Mm.
You see, even though I knew jack about the company, nothing. You see what I'm saying? So I think like once you have that skill, and clearly I was interviewed by 3 people. In front of them, he picked me. Because I killed it right there. You see what I'm saying? Not to give credit to myself, I just had more information going in there. You see what I'm saying? So I think that's it's a good attribute to have, to learn personalities and connect with them at their level instead of your level.
Even I think you can tie this into your professors at school too.
Ooh, that's so true.
Like if you see that your professor's a choleric, if you come late and you have constant absences,
yes,
he can care less about the story. He's going to always assume like you're late. Mm. Bottom line is you're late today.
Exactly.
Like I don't care whether your car crashed, flipped, you're on to sick in the hospital. Like I don't care.
Yeah.
You're late. That's all it is.
Exactly.
So with those kind of people, you have to just talk about results, like you were saying, like
exactly.
You have to just produce results, and then after you produce those results, whether that's doing good on the exams or producing well-written papers and stuff like that, then you can approach the professor because they're all result oriented.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have like a sanguine teacher who's always just bubbly, talking all the time, this and that, they would love to hear the story. So the more fabricated your story, the better it is, in fact.
So true. So true.
So once you understand the temperament of others, then you can use that. I hate the word manipulate, but you can you can manipulate it towards your advantage. So
yeah, what do you do with the melancholy?
With a melancholy?
With a melancholy for inner late.
You can talk about statistics, you can talk about how I don't know, make up a number. 30% of college students that go up into this area at this amount of time during on this freeway, like it's usually results in car accidents or I don't know, just just they're really statistic oriented people. So
yeah, and just to add, you know, what I'd do if I was if I had a melancholic professor and I was late, they're very sensitive people. So I would come in with emotion. I'm so sorry to interrupt your class. I know you were, you had your agenda planned out. I know you took a lot of time to put the PowerPoint together in your lecture. Yeah. And on your behalf, for me to come late, I feel so sorry. From my end, you'll never see me being late again. That's my good word. So when you come from that emotion and you appreciate what they're doing as hard workers preparing for the lecture, they're going to value and they're going to forget that you're talking about being late. And we're going to talk about how well they prepare because no one talks about that because they're so quiet and independent. You create a situation they can talk about themselves.
They love to be recognized, melancholy.
100%.
Because they take pride in their work, so they like to be recognized.
Exactly. So I use a bad situation and turn it into a great situation.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then phlegmatic. Ah, you know, yeah, you're late to anyways, right? Just kidding. They're pretty easy. They're so chill. I'd probably be like, yeah, I was late, but you know. I'll get it done later.
Yeah, phlegmatics are very understanding. They compromise a lot. They're diplomatic. So phlegmatic is your best bet in terms of an interviewer or a professor or anything. Like, exactly. That's who you want.
Bro.
But they're actually, you told me that they're the most rare, right? Temperament? Yeah,
exactly. I forgot about the first boss was phlegmatic. This guy was so lazy to interview me. He just gave me an application and said, just sign this, and he got the job. That phlegmatic. But speaking of phlegmatics, they're 10% of the world. They're the most rarest. They're the calmest under pressure. So, oh, here's another scenario. Imagine you're playing basketball. It's 2 more seconds. Who do you throw it to? Do you give it to the choleric who likes results? Do you give it to the sanguine who's dramatic? Do you give it to the melancholic who's an overthinker? Or do you give it to phlegmatic?
Choleric.
Do you know what? Do you know how to give it to phlegmatic? Do you know why? They're the calmest under pressure. The choleric, he wants to deliver results. He's so intense. Exactly. But phlegmatic, it's not a big deal. He'll pass it, he'll make it, and he'll be a hero. So knowing that dynamic...
His performance does not depend on his emotions.
Exactly. Because they're so carefree. They're so cool about it. They're like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'll shoot a three. Exactly.
Yeah.
The melancholic will overthink it. Hey, should I throw it too high? Should I bounce? Should I dribble? And and 2 seconds already gone. Not to put down the melancholy.
Yeah, what are
we
the
loved it.
Of the ball, making it and thinking of all
exactly. And the segment, he likes the attention of the whole thing. He's going to jack it up and...
He's probably trying to dunk or like trying to do something crazy.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And then the phlegmatic is the coolest. So having that in mind, imagine you'll win more games in your sports. So this attributes to a lot. And that scenario just came to my mind.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
And not only that, but now if you're on the other end as well, if you're a business owner, this book teaches you how to interact with your employees as well.
Big time.
And... that's one of the biggest problems with a lot of corporations in America is that they're focused on the customers and then they focus on their employees last. But in reality, if you focus on your employees, that'll have an effect on the customers from inside out is how you should be focused in. So let's say you have a choleric worker. You're not going to sit there and talk to him about stories or ask him about his personal life or anything like that. He really can care less about conversing about that stuff.
Exactly.
You talk to him, you order them, tell them what to do, put them in a position of leadership to control others.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to be aware of that in terms of the phlegmatic. They're really easygoing. You can put them in a leadership position. You can put them in a following position. They're very fluid people.
Yeah.
In terms of the sanguine, you're going to want to put this person in front of customers. This is the guy that's going to be the head of your marketing team. This is going to be the guy that handles your PR, human resources, all that stuff. This is going to be somebody that's going to be the face of your company. So you're going to want them out there. And then the melancholies, these are the guys that work behind closed doors. They're the ones crunching in numbers for you. They're very statistical. You can rely on them to give you reports, very accurate results. They'll take the time to make charts for you. Charts that you didn't even imagine or even ask them to do. So
right, exactly.
Understanding, that's one of the biggest problems with corporate America is that people are getting jobs assigned to them outside of their temperament. So that's making them hate their lives and they're living life waiting for a vacation. And I don't think that's how you should live your life. You shouldn't need a vacation. You should want a vacation.
And just to add on to that, imagine, right? There's a colorful personality who likes to be in front and get attention and doesn't pay attention to detail. Why would you put him as an accountant? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. And then put the melancholic who likes to be independent and behind the scenes as the face of the company.
Exactly.
You see? So imagine there's one company who puts all the personalities in the right roles.
Mm-hmm.
same product, same everything, right? Yeah. I bet you the numbers on that company with the right personality and the right roles versus the other company, the numbers will just quadruple. Mm. So I think we should, I think, like, for me, I run my own company. So for me, I always put people in position of their strength. Mm. So if someone doesn't like, if someone is like a sanguine, I put them with me to negotiate deals, to meet people, to organize events. You see what I'm saying?
So to get into a topic that we're not so passionate about, which is school. And I think a big problem with school is a lot of students are going into universities, paying a lot of money just to fulfill their parents' desires. And I think you should take the time to really understand your temperament, your personality, and that'll explain which direction you should look into. Mm-hmm. So I think a big problem is there's a lot of phlegmatic students that are pursuing careers such as lawyers and engineers, and it just doesn't work for them because that's a lot of confined logical thinking. Like, you have to, it's either A or B. And they're just not satisfied. They're not going to be happy with their job. And yeah, they don't like to be confined to their thinking. But also vice versa, you cannot place somebody who's choleric or melancholy and take them out of their comfort zone and put them in a position where they have to think on their feet. They have to relate to people. They have a lot of contact with customers. Like, they're going to hate their job. They just want to be behind the desk, crunch numbers. They're interested in results, charts, numbers, all that stuff. So it's really not going to work. You have to be very mindful of your personality.
100%. And also, I'm not saying like a sanguine won't be a good accountant. You know, you can always memorize enough. With repetition, you'll be smarter. But that sanguine who's outgoing, he'd be a much more better, let's say, I don't know, like a restaurant owner, than an accountant. That's for my challenges, you know what I mean? So if so school, it's great. It'll help you with, you know, certain positions, but not with all positions.
And if you don't know who you are, the school is just a waste of
time. Exactly. If you don't even know who your personality is and your core values and what you want to do, you trying to find it through school won't help you because it won't build you up personality-wise.
Yeah, they can care less about your personality.
Exactly. To them, they're just creating a factory of employees.
You're just a walking dollar sign.
Exactly, you know what I mean? So having that in mind, I think we should be very smart about where we're putting our time and money. You know what I mean? Because that 4 years, you're investing from 18, 22, you know, to pursue something that you don't know what your personality is, and you don't know if that personality matches with your career, you see? And then if you're going to invest in that career and stick with it for the next 50, 60 years, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. You see, some people might be lucky and be logical people and be engineers. Fantastic. I need engineers. But at the same time, like, where's the opportunities for people to do other stuff as well, too? What if you're a natural philosopher or a psychiatrist? You know what I mean? So I think that should be based on your strengths, and you can build on it much faster instead of investing that 4 years, you know, or 5 years.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because I think the biggest problem is, like we were talking about earlier, people are chasing profit.
Exactly.
And neglecting their purpose and expecting their purpose to come after they chase profit, but it doesn't work like that. And I feel like that's when you live a very miserable life, waiting for that purpose to come while you're chasing profit. So I think the important thing to do is to discover what your purpose is, pursue your purpose, and I guarantee you the profit will follow. There's a, I forgot the actual statistic, don't quote me on it, but I think it's something around 80% of business owners who start a business in the pursuit of profit are they go out of business within the first or second year.
Exactly.
So knowing that, just be patient. That's the hardest part about pursuing your purpose, is patience, because you might not see money coming in immediately, or you might not see as much money as you expected, like, ever, but I promise you, like, happiness is much more important than profit. Because if you have a lot of profit but you're hating every single day of work, then I don't know what kind of life you're living. Like,
exactly,
it's not worth living a life like that.
It's not. And you know, and if you know that's not worth it, why would you compromise that to make somebody happy, like your parents, or even, you know, whoever you value, you know. Most people, it's their parents, and they go to school to make their parents happy. But I don't know, that's a big sacrifice, you know what I mean? That's like, are you sure you want to do that without even knowing your own personality and what you want to do? You see what I'm saying? And plus, as 18 years old, like, that's the dumbest question to ask 18. What do you want to do when you grow up? This guy doesn't know himself. Or she doesn't know herself. You know what I mean? So we should ask, how do you want to live your life? And then based on how they want to live their life, they should take it one step backwards and see what they have to get to that life. So there's a definition between destination and vehicle. Just because your favorite car is a Rolls Royce and you like to go to Italy, that might not be the right vehicle for that destination. Because you can't take a Rolls Royce through the whole ocean there. You might have to take a different vehicle to reach your destination. But what a lot of people do is, because they like the Rolls Royce, they change their destination. Instead of Italy, they say Del Mar. Oh, it's close.
You're selling yourself short.
You're selling yourself short. And the more you sell yourself short, 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 the less happy you become. And that's the problem that we're trying to dissect right now.
That's true.
And I'm calling that out right now.
And to kind of just give like a short little testimony, I guess, that relates to this.
Right.
Me personally, we both came from a culture where you're either... You only have four options in life. You're a doctor, an engineer, a lawyer, or a failure. That's the only four options there are. Like, there's nothing else. Anything else outside of those three is literally equivalent to somebody who just gave up on life and is just roaming the earth. So it was very hard for me to... I personally chose the field of study of psychology. Awesome. And a minor in philosophy. So these two things, you can already imagine, in this culture are... They were laughed at, ridiculed. Like, I was asked if I should pursue different fields. Like, why am I doing this and that? And it even got to the point where I applied for my bachelor's as a pre-med student in hopes of going to medical school just to please my parents, to get the highest form of degree in psychology, which is psychiatry, where you have to go to medical school. Mm-hmm. Even though I had no desire to prescribe medicine to people or to even go to medical school, in to be honest. And I guess it's gonna take a lot of hard work, but you need to get to a point where you live life for yourself. Like,
awesome.
Live life for, obviously, the kingdom. Yeah. But other than that, like, you should be living life for yourself to make yourself happy. Like, you, at the end of the day, like, as sad as it sounds, our parents are not gonna be here for our whole life. So when they pass away, we're going to be stuck with their expectations and standards, and it doesn't even make sense. That's not fair to yourself. So I think it's important to take the time to discover what you're passionate about. There's a term in positive psychology called flow, which is where you lose all sense of self-awareness when you're doing something. So for me, that would be writing. Whenever I'm writing, I lose all self-awareness. I don't think about what I'm wearing. I don't think about who's in the room at the moment. I don't think about what I'm gonna have for lunch. Beautiful. All self-awareness goes out the window, and then I'm in a state of flow. So whenever you find what that is, try and pursue that and try and see if you can make a profit off that. If not, try and find something that relates to it, or try and find a company that fosters your passions and your purpose. And what about you? Want to share your topic?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's kind of, I don't know, why would I sell myself short of what God intended me to do for a paycheck and...
approval of your parents.
Yeah, approve that I love my parents. Exactly. Think about God's perspective. He's like, wow, you didn't want to answer my call, but you took your parents' calling? Who made your parents? Did my parents make
That's
you?
True.
You know, like, think about God. Like, imagine God, right? He gave us a purpose. He gave us a game plan and sent us to earth.
Yeah.
And then we're selling ourselves short because of a parent. Like, what is that? That's a... biggest de-edification to God. Biggest edification. That's like telling God, oh, yeah, that was cute, but yeah, I'm living with my parents right now physically, and I don't see anyway, so let me just do that. Yeah, go ahead. God's going to punish you. Okay, pay 50 grand, lose 5 years, and by the time you're 30... And here's the funniest thing. Another statistic for the melancholics. An average American, by the time they're 31, they change their career 7 times. That means minimum, they have to crack 7 interviews. Minimum. Imagine how many interviews, how many times they upload the resume. They're always changing jobs. They're in IT, now they're an engineer, now they're jumped to real estate, now they're management, they try to open a restaurant, all over the place. When they came in so simple, right? Follow calling from the young age, build on top of that, and expand, you know, God's glory and kingdom, right?
Yeah, I feel like, but when you say calling, I think it's a lot easier said than done. So, I mean, explain, how do you discover your calling?
For me, I had to go on my knees and ask God, what's my calling? And for me, it's definitely from business. Do you know why? I vividly remember I grew up in the Middle East, okay? None of my family members were in business. And whoever was in business, my family was hella de-edified, okay? They all come from an employee background. I had one uncle who was a multimillionaire, okay? I didn't even know this till I was 18. Oh, yeah, he has his own business. Yeah, he's a millionaire, but, you know, I was like, what? Anyways, when I was 7 years old, okay, it was Halloween. All my friends were Superman, Spider-Man. At 7 years old, with no business, no idea of business, for Halloween, I don't celebrate Halloween, by the way, but, you know, what can I do? I was a businessman. Think about it. Who does that? You see what I'm saying? None of my parents ran a business. None of my friends were in business. Again, it was something that was a seed that was in my heart. So I always pursued it. And I always had an image of coming to America, seeing myself in a suit with a briefcase. So long story short, I think God sows a seed early on. And I think we should identify it and build on top of it. And that's when I started my own company in college. And now that's my biggest passion, because I was able to use all my gifts, my personality the most, through running my own company. Exactly. You see what I'm saying? So I think it's between you and God. You shouldn't go to your parents or a counselor to find your calling. That doesn't make any sense. You can learn from how they use their calling, but you shouldn't go to them for your calling. Exactly. There's a big difference. Exactly. I'm sorry I get passionate about it, because I see a lot of people dropping the ball and it sucks.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, if you don't take the time to kind of accept your temperament or your personality and who you are, the stone that God gave you to sculpt and polish, that's when it leads into comparison. You're going to start to compare and look at other people and say, ooh, I wish I was somebody who's outspoken, who I can go out there and I can speak to all these people and do this. Wow, I can never be a leader. I can never do this. I can never do that. Then you start to doubt yourself. But then I feel like that's disrespectful to God, because it says in the Bible that he's already blessed us with everything that we need in order to fulfill our purpose. So in knowing that, just like a personal example, like I could never see myself as a leader growing up, because I'm somebody who's shy, more reserved. I get timid whenever I'm asked to speak in front of people. Even when we have group discussions, I'm not the one who's the loudest. I give input when I'm asked, but I'm not the one who's constantly leading the conversation. Sometimes you don't even know I'm there in the group. But one thing that I've realized is, once I take the time to understand my personality and temperament, you can be any four temperaments can be a leader. As long as you foster that, foster and take the time to polish that stone that God has given you, I think any four of the temperaments can be a leader. It's just going to be a different kind of leader. Benji, like, it's all leadership. Leadership does not have a certain personality or characteristic. I think that's a lie that's fed to us. And I think that it's kind of like saying we are made in the image of Christ, right? So that's like saying the right leg is better than the left arm.
No way.
Right?
Right, exactly.
They both serve two different functions.
Exactly.
Right? But it's one purpose.
Exactly.
So I think that's very important for us to distinguish. Like, there's a lot of legs out there comparing themselves to arms and saying, why am I not an arm? Why don't I get to pick up things and put them down? And why don't I get to lift heavy things, this and that? But then there's a lot of arms looking at the legs saying, why am I not a leg? How come I don't get to be so important in, like, walking and running and all the driving that goes on that they preserve? But, like, we're so blind to our own purposes because we're always looking at other people's purposes.
Exactly. So I think there's three categories. There's God's business, your business, and their business. We get unhappy when we go into God's business and other people's business, but we're the most happy when we're in our own business.
Mind your business.
So mind your own business.
Hashtag mind your business.
Hashtag apostrophe, hashtag arrow at the minor business, hashtag X at looking at the other arrow. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think if people just stick to the basics of minding their own business, yeah, you don't think about it. If you mind your own business so good, you don't have time to go to other people's business. You have so much momentum minding your own business. Think about I can give you so many examples, but yeah, just that's the way I would put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kind of go off of compare and destroy, don't you think that has a lot to do with a lot of people not understanding themselves?
Exactly.
And recognizing the blessings in their lives.
Exactly.
So, like the the T.D. Jakes example.
Which one?
Remember how he was saying a lot of people are always praying for things.
Uh-huh.
They're praying for tables. How come I don't have this table? How come I don't have this chair? But they don't recognize that God has placed a tree in their lives.
Exactly.
For us to sculpt and turn into the chairs and the tables. Like, God does not work like that. He doesn't throw the things that we need.
Exactly.
Like, in terms of, like, the things that we want.
Exactly.
He gives us things that we need to cultivate what we want.
Exactly. And for us to turn the table, the tree to a table, it requires vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Word of God says. Man without vision shall perish. Think about us and an animal. An animal can't have visions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, you have a dog, Ted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ted, if you throw him a bone and fetch, he's going to run to the bone and give it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But while he's running to that bone, he's not going to have a vision saying, wow, one day I'm going to be in a circus in front of 5,000 people, and I see myself doing this in front of 1,000 people, juggling and becoming the best dog in town.
Yeah.
He won't have that skill, or he doesn't have that capacity. So I believe if we're able to be a human, we should tap into our vision. And unless we tap into our vision, we're not going to grow, and we're never going to have a tree. We're never going to have that table, because we're still waiting for the tree to turn to a table.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make sense. We need vision, saying, I can see this table becoming a tree. What do I do next? And then that's when the game starts.
Mm.
Till then, you're just on the bench, just looking at the tree.
That's
wow, pine tree. Awesome.
All right, we kind of went off on a tangent, but essentially at the end of the day, take the time to know yourself. I give this book a 10 out of 10, to be honest. 100%. What about you?
Yeah, I was telling one of my friends, outside of the Bible and my checkbook, this is my favorite book.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of Growth Over Comfort.